This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to The Morning Run. You're here with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. We are running a poll on the BFM Twitter account asking you whether you'd feel confident to travel once you get the COVID-19 vaccine. Do let us know what you think over there. In the meantime, we are turning our attention to iCina, because according to a poll conducted by the UCSI Poll Research Centre, almost half of the people in the T20 income group said they used their iCina withdrawal to invest in gold and stocks. For those aged 26 and 50 to 55 in the B40 and M40 income groups, repayment was the main reason for their EPF withdrawal.
The research centre also found that only about 49% of respondents used the money for essentials like food and groceries. So does this mean that the iCina scheme is not as effective in addressing the needs of those who are faced with economic hardships in this pandemic, or has it really been subject to abuse?
And for more insight into this morning we're speaking with Calvin Cheng, analyst in the economics program at ISIS Malaysia. Calvin, thanks so much for joining us today. So apparently high income earners are using the EPF's iCina scheme to buy gold and stocks. Does this represent a gap perhaps in the implementation of the scheme?
Well, I actually haven't really heard much about that happening. But to my knowledge, to be eligible for iCina, you only need to have either lost your job or have lost about 30% of your salary. So there's no income requirements or anything. So there's technically nothing precluding high income earners from withdrawing their ETF savings to then, you know, do whatever, buy gold, buy stocks or anything. So as long as they meet these conditions, then I guess it's not technically a gap, because the program does not explicitly disallow high income earners, right? So of course there are numerous other gaps and shortfalls with the scheme, especially in terms of achieving its objective of boosting the welfare of affected individuals and workers. But this doesn't seem to be a gap at this point.
And I guess the big question here is, when we talk about the iCina situation, Calvin, is could that have been an alternative instead of having people use dip into their EPF savings to help tide them through the hard times? Because if we take a look at the situation, there were about 49% of the respondents here used the money for food and groceries, which does show that maybe the targeting of the iCina may not be as targeted as we would want.
I think that's absolutely right. But I also guess it depends on what we're trying to achieve. So if the goal is to try to support the welfare of lower income workers and households and help them weather the income shocks from the pandemic, then something like the EPF measures would likely not be the best way, right? I mean, it's a well-intentioned program that definitely has helped some people. But the matter of fact is that a large subset of the lower income workers do not have EPF savings anyway. Like many of them have zero savings, right? Never contributed in their life. Okay, so something like this scheme would not help provide liquidity to many low-income workers, which is precisely the group that need help the most, right? And in cases when they do have EPF balances, they're likely very small, right? You don't want to ask a person who has been badly affected by the pandemic to dip into their already small retirement savings. You want to focus more on like government-funded emergency assistance, rather than incentivizing people to erode their retirement savings, in my view, right? So alternatives, I think we just need to turn to the numerous initiatives that have already been implemented by the government, like the Bantuan Prihatin National cash transfers and the pre-existing unemployment benefits under the employment insurance system. So I think focusing more heavily on all of these programs and investing more time and money in all these programs, and most importantly, reducing the number of people who fall through the cracks of these programs, I think that would be immensely beneficial, right? And the longer case numbers remain high, the more urgent the need for greater emergency support measures are. You know, seeing as there's been really no new large-scale emergency aid to households and workers since, I think, like the Penjana package last year, right? So we're running now on existing programs.
The iCina program was, what I understand, meant to help the middle class who lost their jobs or suffered a pay cut. So it ends in March. Do you think it should be extended, and how should it be tweaked?
Well, like I said, I think that the iCina program may not help the kind of people that they are trying to help. So I think that the goal now is to instead pivot to focus more on more direct measures, more direct assistance measures. And I think the key would be unemployment insurance and cash transfers.
So it should be scrapped. It should not be extended.
I think it can be extended, but I think there's a sense that we need to focus time and effort on programs that actually do the most work, right? So this iCNR program, they may offer some flexibility. So it is a well-intentioned program. I think it does offer flexibility. And if you look at the CAS Act in the US, they have a very similar provision to the iCNR measures. But I think that there needs to be a recognition that this program is not going to, you know, solve a lot of the many issues, especially amongst the low-income group. So I think that right now we need to focus on more direct measures, more direct cash assistance, and more direct assistance through unemployment benefits.
So the other issue is also the urgency of the need for these funds to low-income groups, right? So, and a lot of the times, the efficient targeted measures do compromise on expediency. So how do we balance between expediting help quickly, but also to the right people that need it?
Right. I think that's a great point. And it's a great nuance that's important for people to understand. And absolutely right, in the crisis times, I think we need to get the money out to the rakyat as quickly as possible. So we have to make do with less targeting. So targeting has large costs, even in normal times, right? But in crisis times, it's even more urgent. But there is a goal to being more relaxed in targeting, okay? And it's to be quick, but it's also about reducing exclusion errors, right? So this means reducing the number of people who fall through the cracks, like I said, and don't receive the assistance, which happens a lot when we're too focused on targeting. So there's two things, right? Exclusion errors, like I mentioned, which means people falling through the cracks. And then there's the opposite, which is inclusion errors, which is, like you mentioned, you know, when rich people take advantage of iCNR, et cetera. So in a crisis, the big idea is that you want to tolerate more inclusion so that you can focus on decreasing exclusion, right? But my main gripe or contention with this EPF thing is not really about the targeting or inclusion or exclusion or like, oh, rich people are going to buy gold or anything. I mean, those are important, but I guess the main contention here, like I said, is something like iCNR does not seem to be helpful to the types of people that need help the most. And this is not a failure of targeting, right? It's just by design. And there are a variety of other programs that we know do help more, and we know that we should be focusing more time, effort, and money on those, in my view.
Yeah, as you mentioned earlier, Calvin, I think two of the examples you used were cash transfers and unemployment insurance. But I just want to pivot this conversation a little bit to, I guess, a more of a bigger picture conversation. Mm-hmm. Now, research has shown that many people don't have enough money in their EPF when they retire, usually only lasting about 3 to 5 years. In your view, does this mean we need to rethink the entire EPF system or even the concept of retirement and pension?
That's right. And I think that's a good point, and it's something that many researchers, analysts, and policymakers have been aware of for a long time. And in my view, it's not so much of a rethink as thinking of ways to improve the existing system, and to plug existing vulnerabilities. So it's well known that the main issues are coverage and inadequacy, which incidentally may be actually worsened by iCNR. With all the withdrawals, right? So, but even more than that, we know that far more than a third of all workers are uncovered by any public pension enrichment, whether EPF or public pensions. And this is complicated by the fact that an increasing number of people have non-standard work arrangements now, right? Gig work or self-employment. And as such, they do not contribute or they choose not to contribute to EPF. And the other thing that you touched on is adequacy, right? That's not enough because low wages or intermittent contributions and low retirement ages means that people usually don't have enough in EPF to last their retirement, right? And this issue is particularly worse for people at the bottom of the income distribution. So as such, I think increasingly there's a sense that we may need to supplement existing contributory pension systems like the EPF with other non-contributory or publicly funded measures, I think, which can come in the form of an expansion of social assistance for elderly persons or subsidized old age working arrangements. So though I think that public pension systems, universal or contributory or whatever, is just one component of the country's social protection system. So I think many other programs, like I mentioned, poverty target, cash transfers and unemployment benefits that I believe have done a lot of good and I think can do a lot of good if we invest in expanding and improving them.
Well, you know, I think we talked about the comprehensive social protection system so that those who genuinely need help will actually get help, so whether they are employee or self-employed. Now, this issue, like you mentioned, has been brought up many, many times and in many years. What's been holding back the government in developing such a system? If you could just summarize it for us.
Well, actually, we do have a lot of the components of the system, and a lot of it is working and it is running. So, like I mentioned, the poverty packet cash transfers, which has recently been renamed from Bantuan Sara Hidup to Bantuan Prihatin Rakyat, the first payment is due at the end of February. So that is one component of a social protection system, right? So it's meant to provide direct cash assistance to people who are under the income thresholds, right? So typically people on the lower end of the income distribution. So, and then the other thing, of course, unemployment benefits, like I mentioned, under the employment insurance system, there are job search allowance benefits, which currently have a maximum of 6 months. So if you lose your job and you have proof of loss of employment, you're eligible to about 6 months of a portion of your last drawn paycheck. So I think a lot of these components are there. It's just a matter of continuing to invest and expand all these provisions.
Thanks so much for joining us today, Calvin. That was Calvin Cheng, analyst in the economics program at ISIS Malaysia, talking to us about the ICINA scheme as well as the broader social protection space and kind of what is really needed in order to ensure that those who are not necessarily covered by the ICINA scheme, possibly by virtue of the fact that they didn't have a lot in their EPF to begin with, are given adequate protection and aid during this crisis.
Yeah, and I'm particularly paying attention to, well, this month is normally where we hear from EPF about dividends. I wanted to see how much AUM they have at this point, right? Because how much assets they have, because let's see how much have been withdrawn and things like that. And also, of course, the dividend rate that they will be announcing later this month or early in March. All things that a lot of us pay attention to.
Indeed, and we'll be bringing you updates as we get them ourselves. But right now, we are heading into the 8 o'clock news bulletin. And after that, The Breakfast Grill, where I'll be speaking with Ben Bland, director of the Southeast Asia program at the Lowy Institute, on his book looking at the life and times of Indonesian President Joko Widodo. So stay tuned for that after the news, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.